Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Pony Development Sync for August 15th, 2023. I'm your host, Joe McElbain. If those others on the call would like to say their name so that people listening along to the recording later can associate a name to the voice, now is a good time for that.
Hi, I'm Sean Allen.
Adrian Boyko.
Brett Davis.
Nora.
All right, so taking a look at our auto-generated agenda for today, we've got a list of pull requests in the Pony C repo. The first one is a test. The first two are test pull requests by Sean trying to fix a seg fault issue. Sean, do you want to talk about these test PRs, what they've revealed or not revealed so far?
It's 4369.
Okay. Do we want to spend some time talking about 4369 now?
We could spend a lot of time talking about 4369 because I spent a lot of time looking at it.
Okay.
I
So,
am I am I know why it broke with the LLVM 15. I am apparently insane because I'm trying to track down the actual root cause of the issue, which has been a bug in the Pony compiler slash et cetera stuff since before you and I started working on it. So, which part do you want to talk about? Do we want to
Let's
start with how your LLVM 15 one created the
yes.
bug and how I
Let's
can do
start
it?
by telling me how I created the bug. Yeah.
Okay, so well, no, you didn't create the bug. It made one small change, which caused it. So, can you go to your the I think it's 4237 is the LLVM 15 PR that you did.
Yeah.
Okay, so
4157 is FFI tuples. 4137, you said?
4327.
4327, okay.
In particular, let's look at genopt.cc.
Yeah.
In the optimize function, right? Lines, what are now line 1001.
Okay. Yep.
Okay, so this is doing the build per module default pipeline. And if we're not in release, it's setting optimization level one. That's what's different. We did not
Okay.
use optimization level one before, we used zero. Now, I suspect that this happened because if you call build per module default pipeline with an optimization level of zero, it throws an assertion. It does this because there is now a separate method to call if you're doing optimization level zero,
Oh, I never knew that.
which corresponds to what used to happen in the old one, if you passed it zero, but they split those into two methods. All right. And
Okay.
you actually have to pick one to call. That's why we started seeing this with the LLVM 15. All right.
Okay, but it was not introduced by that. Okay.
But most definitely not. So there is the comment in there where if you actually look, it's on like it's there as context in the in that commit, but there's the issue with debug info and needing to strip it because there's weird things that happen when you're in release mode, right?
Okay.
You okay? So
And I never actually knew what was the specifics. Like I had searched before for understanding what kind of problems pop up with debug info if you did not strip, and I never found that.
43. So this makes the problem go away. Okay, that change. However, the other way you can make the problem go away is to merely strip the debug info. And by the way, I was able to recreate this issue in LLVM 14 by
using O1.
By using not even using O1, but actually running it with debug info and running the inliner. Running the inline, the same inliner for debug for that. Because what I tracked down with this is that the thing which is causing our, in a way, the thing which is causing our issue is the inlining. If we don't do any inlining when we have the debug info on, right, we have no problem. Things do not go boom.
Is that the only optimization you're running is literally just the inliner?
No, that's the only optimization we have to turn off.
Well, okay. But that doesn't mean that's where the problem is. It's just that without inlining, there's a lot less you can do with the other optimizations because the things that you have to bring to meet each other are not meeting each other.
The inliner does trigger the issue. Okay. Now, the interesting thing is, and we've seen this with others, and I had to spend a good amount of time on this, and I haven't fully tracked this down yet, but there's also optimization levels for code gen, which impacts on optimizations which are done for the target machine backend like x86. Right? That's what we set in host.cc. Okay. There is basically in the x86 backend, and it looks to be the same in the ARM backend. There's almost all of the optimizations that get done based on the target are either basically choices between no optimizations or optimizations greater than none. And it does all up. Pretty much all of the optimizations based on that. So the other thing that can be done to fix this problem, right, is changing in host.cc the optimization level for debug for the debug builds from none to less, default, or aggressive. All of them are completely fine. What we seem to have is an interaction between some optimization or lack thereof. It's hard to tell at this point because I ran into some problems trying to cut this down further. In the target backend optimization stuff and something that goes on with related to something that can be triggered by inlining actually happening if there is debug info attached and it hasn't been stripped.
Okay. Can you remind me, have we tried turning off all Pony specific optimizations?
Yeah, it has nothing to do with this.
Okay.
Nothing whatsoever.
Okay. So you know what would be an interesting thing that might be able to help pare it down further would be to try to go to gen debug one moment, let me try to find the specific part of the code.
I'm not sure that the bug is ours. The bug may very well be an LLVM thing. So looking at the LLVM backend stuff, the fact that we are setting gen opt none looks like we're going down a little used code path. The standard is default, which would be what it sets it to if you don't give it anything else. And
it's which is possible, equivalent to O1?
That's the equivalent to O2. The equivalent of O1 is less.
Okay.
But in the target backend stuff, at least for x86, there's no difference between less and default. Like, actually, there might be one thing that gets turned on for default that's not on for less. But otherwise, everything is basically either not equal to none or greater than none. And then there was like one, which is greater than or equal to default. But it's all basically a binary thing there. And it looks like that the none path probably is not used very often at all, and that we could be having a confluence of things coming together where it happens to be that we're just walking an unknown LLVM path. I don't know that for sure. I was hoping to be able to cut it down more, but as part of trying to cut it down, I actually managed to introduce compiler crashes. Because we're into some funky fun territory there in the x86 backend.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, my thought was if the problem goes away when debug info is stripped, it would be interesting to try modifying gen debug to attach or the places that call gen debug, depending on what you're doing, to basically do less debug things attached. So we should be able to like try to incrementally cut out parts of the debugging info, and see at what point we can or can't reproduce the bug.
That sounds like a good idea, because I hit a thing where it's not easy to just turn stuff off. In the x86 backend, I turned everything off. I did everything to make it so that it was like something other than none, trying to figure out what it is when it's not none that makes this work. And it's somewhere in a section of code, which if you just do it in a very coarse fashion, results in compiler crashes with assertions in one of the function analysis passes. So it's kind of difficult going that route. So the gen debug sounds like a good idea. The other thing from my looking at this is I think it would be reasonable for us to stop using, for the code backend, to stop using genopt none and to use genopt default. It looks like the normal path, and these are not optimizations which are going to be really problematic for us with debug things. It's pure like x86 optimizations, right? Which are, from looking at that code and from the comments in it, are expected to be on for pretty much any program.
Interesting, because I've experienced like impaired debugging going from gen none to 01.
Interesting.
I'm not sure if I can like really pin it down though.
But are in host.cc or changes in gen opt? Because those are two separate things which are disconnected from one another.
Okay. I don't remember the specifics enough to pin it down. So
it got to the point this morning where I was like, I don't understand why we have two separate things we can twiddle here. And I spent the morning learning a lot about it while trying to figure it out. Right. And they are two entirely separate things which are being twiddled. Like the stuff in host.cc is for the target machine, whatever it is, in doing optimizations, like being able to say, oh, on x86, like one of the things that gets turned on, for example, is x86 features multiple different ways to do division, some of which are right, faster than others. If you do none, it uses the slowest form of division.
Yeah.
If you do other than none, it will use the faster form of division, and you're not losing any debug info there. Right.
I get it. Yeah. So this is only the target machine optimizations, but not the LLVM optimization pass over the IR optimizations.
Correct. Yes, that's Gen Ops one. Now it is LLVM doing optimizations for x86, but it's doing it for like, what are we going to decide to do for code gen for division, right?
Right.
Et cetera type stuff.
Okay.
And whatever it is, which is going on with the debug stuff, does not happen if we're doing something more than none. So it is an interaction somehow between the inlining, the debug info, and something which is that which is done or for none or not done for none as part of the code gen.
Okay.
That's where I've gotten to. But so before we go further with that, and I'll say I'm gonna take a look at gen debug like tomorrow and see what we can do. I think it's reasonable to fix the existing outstanding problem by making it for that thing on line 1001 to call the two different methods based on whether we're in release or not. And that takes care of the immediate thing that was introduced in LLVM 15, which is impacting on the macOS x86 build CI tests, and also on that 4369 issue.
Yes, I agree. That's reasonable.
Okay. I will open a PR for that later today, and we can do a release once somebody looks at it and goes, those look like good release notes.
So unfortunately, the unstable newest version of the Zoom client they made me download last week in order to join has basically frozen all of my inputs and I can't move anything, but I can still talk to you. I'm going to try to get back. So if you or someone else could run things just for a couple minutes while I try to come back.
So can you do leave and assign it to somebody or just see what you can do and yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'll try to, I'm going to try to shut the lid of my computer and open it again. See if that gets me back control.
Hey, I'm the host now. Joe's gone. All right. Well, we're still recording, so that's good. I wasn't sure what was going to happen there. Yeah. Yes, indeed. So yes, Dippin. From what we were talking about on Friday, it does look like it's a memory corruption, but it's not a memory corruption that's coming from anything except for some jacked up combination of those things.
Sounds exciting.
It's literally creating binaries of death in some scenarios.
Sounds fun, I think.
Joyous, good time, fun things.
Yeah. I was thinking when you said strip help that maybe the debug info was getting generated incorrectly.
It's possible. Right. There is a combination of three things. And all I know is that on one side, it's the debug info. On another side, it's inlining happening in anything other than the most basic, simple inlining. It's got like there's inlining and just a tiny bit of inlining. Right. It's the bigger inlining, which some part of that causes the issue. But I can't find what part of that is actually causing the issue, because it very well could be that the inlining is triggering something else that happens down the road as a new one after the inlining. And that's the real cause, right? But turning off the inlining does it. And then there's something with what we generate for the at code gen time, which also appears to take care of the problem. Perhaps because the thing on the backside doesn't happen. Not really sure, but much further along than before. But so all of that, Joe.
Yes.
This is why we couldn't see anything from the IR.
What is?
That, technically, there could very well be something wrong with the IR, but it's not wrong at the time that it's just the IR.
Okay.
Right. There's some combination of at least three things that have to happen.
Well, unless we're generating something wrong with the debug info.
That could be, but it has to be something that we're doing wrong with the debug info, which goes along with something which happens at the code gen time, other than just the debug info, which then also has to have this inlining happen to probably trigger some other optimization, which puts all of this into a scrambled state.
Yeah. I just wonder if we're generating debug info in a way that's different enough from how Clang does it, that when a certain optimization runs, that's okay for Clang because it's been tested in the ways that Clang generates debug info. When it comes to the way we do it, it goes boom in subtle ways.
And it would potentially be a optimization which will not happen based on our code gen level as a possibility. Yes. This is the ballpark which I'm in. It's a big ballpark, but it is still a ballpark, and that's what I'm imagining. The slightly lesser chance is that there's nothing that we're doing wrong, right? But there's an assumption which is made for this code, which is based on C++ or Clang or whatever, which we're not doing, which is not technically wrong, but there's some code in LLVM which makes an assumption which is incorrect, right? It's sort of flip side of the coin.
Okay. What is next for us to talk about? We've got 4390 pull requests, add macOS x86 support, bringing once, it back once, because we're on GitHub Actions.
Yep, that will be able to be done once the I'm going to close the two test ones now. Those were fun. I had to figure out how you can get PRs to run when you have conflicts against the main branch. The solution, by the way, is that when I wanted to test with LLVM 14, right? I had to create a branch from a point in time when we were using LLVM 14 and then create a branch to test changes on and then do that and open a PR for that second branch, which would then be targeting the branch which was created from a time when we were using LLVM 14. Then the GitHub Actions for pull requests will run.
Mm.
Because it's trying to do a merge commit to run the PR against, right? For this is what would happen if you merge this to blah. And if you don't go it against main, it's like, well, I can't merge against that. You need to resolve things. I'm not going to run anything. So
that's how that interesting.
Works. So yeah. So 4390. Once we get the back to what it was like with 14 fix in 4390, the macOS x86 support can roll forward.
Okay. Taking a look next at 4383, move Windows CI from Cirrus CI to GitHub Actions. This is a draft PR.
Yeah, I'm in over my head. Gordon, when he's back from vacation, is going to be trying some things out on it.
Okay.
It's GitHub Actions don't support Windows containers, unlike Cirrus. So we have to build up a new environment to do it in. I tried doing it, and I started running into funky configuration things that I just don't know how to fix.
So yeah, we're intending to not use container image, but just cache the LLVM stuff.
There is no Yeah, you can't run Windows containers on
yeah.
GitHub Actions. So there we go.
Okay. 4382, drop free BSD as supported platform.
Yes, this could be approved now, but I'm going to put a do not merge on this because I'd like to get that fix out unrelated, right? So we have like a last working FreeBSD rather than our last FreeBSD release one being one that's potentially buggy. Buggy.
That would be a kind courtesy.
But yeah, this one's pretty straightforward. It's whacking all of the stuff. I think it's the stuff that's in the release notes and what gets added to the README, which is really of interest there.
Yep. Just confirming. Yep. I'm hitting approve. Sorry, FreeBSD. We'll take another look when GitHub Actions supports you.
Probably never. I mean, just being, I don't expect that they're ever going to.
Fair. 4372, temporary fix for seg fault caused by exception code bug.
That was the one where I could never make, where I couldn't make it happen in CI.
Okay. But now you're going to apply a different fix for the optimization level.
Yeah, I'm going to get it back to what it was, and it should take care of this. Yes. But the temporary fix that was in here was the one changing it from CodeGen opt none to CodeGen opt default period, right? Which is one of the three sides of the equation. But that's not what we're going to do. We're going to do the one which takes us back to what we were doing in 14 and address it there, and then continue looking to try and find the full underlying cause.
Right.
Which I hope to find before I start my new job. And if I don't, then this might go on the back. Then this would probably go on the back burner again, because it's very time intensive.
Yep. Okay. That takes us through pull requests, and we're also halfway through the hour. Does anybody have topics they want to raise and discuss before we continue discussing the rest of the things on the auto-generated agenda? All right, then let's take a look at issue tickets in the Pony C repo. We already looked at 4369. We're going to look at 4391. Property runner / async / complete multi-fail action regularly fails in ARM, Linux, glibc, CI.
I asked Matthias to take a look at this. This looks like the test makes assumptions about the speed of the environment and when things would happen, and interleavings, which may not be the case, say, when you're running in QEMU, where everything is slower.
Okay.
And so this is semi-regularly failing in in that environment. And it definitely looks like this is a flaky test issue.
Okay. Is property runner, is this actually, I can't remember, was this moved in the standard library?
Yes. Yes. When we moved in
Pony check.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Okay. And Multi-action. This is multi-action. Complete. This is complete multi-action.
Complete underscore multi underscore fail underscore action.
Oh, complete multi-fail action. So there's an async dot run async test. Action equals succeed once. Expect action, action. Complete action, action. Fail action, action.
Oh, you'll see the test is running and then it times out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, timing
and
out.
It times out in one of our slowest CI environments.
Right. Times out after how many seconds? Let's see.
I don't know PonyCheck well enough in order to know the proper way to address it, which is why I asked Matthias to take a look. Because I think this test, like just changing the timeout, while it might temporarily fix the issue, isn't really a real issue, isn't the correct thing of like, here, we're going to run X number of times and we're just going to assume that they'll all complete, right? Rather than where, but if it runs slowly, everything worked here. It just ran out of time, right? And there is also literally a logic error in some of its checking stuff where it assumes that the amount of time that the test will take, the amount of time the test has to do everything is exactly equal to the timeout, which actually gets started before the test gets started. So there's a logical bug there as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think that in practice, like anything that's using PonyTest's long test feature, you always have to specify a timeout to use long test. And like there's no way to say, all right, this test is unconditionally going to complete it. Well, what I'm getting at is I think the kind of sort of conceptual problem that you have with, you mentioned like about, all right, well, the timeout, like we could increase the timeout, but that doesn't fix the deeper issue. Like within the affordances of PonyTest, right, we don't have any way to, what's the word I'm looking for? It's like we're not able to take quiescence into account within PonyTest. Like we're always tied to a timeout, and that timeout might never be long enough on a hypothetically arbitrarily slow machine. So anything that's using PonyTest long test is going to have that problem.
But it is particularly problematic for this set of async tests because it's going to run X number of times without taking anything else into account.
Just because, so you're saying just because it has such a high amount of CPU work to do?
Yeah, like it, because it's not just saying, oh, we're going to run this one action and it should be completed in 3 minutes, right? It's saying, oh, we're going to run 1,000 of these and they'll be completed in 3 minutes.
Right.
Which takes the problem, which is real, but usually mostly theoretical, that we were discussing for a single one, and makes it far more likely to happen because we're now running some number of times, which in this case was chosen based on, well, what works well and never had a problem when we're running natively, blah, 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 et cetera type stuff, right? Where a one thing could be is just instead of doing this like 1,000 times, do it 30 times or 50 times or you know, finding some type of balance in addition to fixing the thing, or looking at it and going, Actually, we need to redesign how these are done entirely, right? Like, we will keep firing them off so long as we still have time before the timeout, for example, or something. I don't fully understand this particular test well enough to know what the correct solution is. I was just able to diagnose the problem. I can see why it happens. I just don't know for what this is supposed to be testing, et cetera, and how all of PonyCheck works, what the correct way to rework this is. And that's why I asked Matthias to take a look.
Is PonyCheck an abstraction I answered my question, which is like PonyCheck is an extension for PonyTest. It uses PonyTest under the hood, right?
Yes.
And so in that case, it makes me wonder if it would be possible in principle to add a feature to PonyTest or to redesign PonyTest if it came to that, to make it such that when the program reaches quiescence, it will evaluate any outstanding tests that didn't finish, mark them as failed, and print some output. Like perhaps as a really awful finalizer. I mean, like there's no mechanism that you have in the Pony runtime right now to hook into the quiescence process itself, right? You just need to have a finalizer on something that exists as long as your tests exist. And then that finalizer could run, and in theory could run an action that is going to print some output, but your finalizer is not supposed to be able to send messages.
How would it hit quiescence though? Because we're waiting. And somebody has a reference to us, which means that they could send us a message, right?
Well, it would be if nobody has any open timers or sockets, right? No noisy connections. Then at some point, if you have let's say you're testing some code that needs to talk to actors that talk to each other in complex ways, and they come back, and you know you have a complete action that goes to PonyTest to say, all right, I've completed the last thing I expected to do. It successfully finished what I wanted. And the test is over. As long as you have, so let's imagine this program has no timers or sockets. It's just actors talking to each other in a complex pattern. And you want to use the test to prove that the actors do indeed finish the conversation and talk to each other until the complete action happens in the test runner. If you reach quiescence, that means that your actors stopped talking to each other. They stopped doing things.
Yep.
Before they did the, basically they finished, they're done doing anything. And so if they haven't called complete by that point, like you have sort of a timeout without any timer, you know that no further progress is possible on the test.
Yep.
And then you don't have to like tune the timeout to be super long or, wait a long time to find out whether you timed out. Yeah, I don't know. And it'll work on arbitrarily slow machines.
It's an interesting one. Yeah, it doesn't solve all problems, but it solves one set of ones, right? It doesn't solve the thing where, oops, there's a bug in my code, and we're never going to hit quiescence, and that action is not going to happen, right? But
yes.
But it does solve the, I got to the end and I didn't send the final I'm done message. I forgot to send it. Right. Which I like what you're saying. I don't know if on the basis that you kind of need to test for both of those things, if you get anything out of, having the quiescence type thing, but that I think that's a conversation for us to have about another thing. Because certainly for some use cases, it would be really great. I just don't know if you'd end up using it because you might have the other use case as well. Or rather, both would still exist. Anyway, let's think on that one and talk some more, because that's an interesting point.
Yeah. The other use cases, I guess, so the kinds of things that wouldn't catch, just to elaborate those examples, it would be, I kept a socket open or a timer open that I should have closed.
Yeah.
Or I got stuck in an infinite behavior loop.
Yep. And then you need the long test timeout in order to fail those tests. Yeah.
Right. Because your test is not quiet, but it did not do what you expected. We can't guarantee that it will or will not make progress. Again, the Turing problem.
Yep.
Halting problem. Okay. Yeah. All right. Interesting. Yeah. I think I agree with you. It's less useful because those other things still need to be protected. Right. And so you still have to choose a timeout value. So, yeah. Okay. Plus, it would be super messy to try to hook into the runtime's quiescence system, I think. I think that would be complicated.
I think it's worth thinking about some more, though. And who knows what comes out of it.
Yeah. Okay. Within the shared Docker repo, we have pull request 51 update to checkout version 3. There should be no issue with this.
I was actually going to merge this after it... after it went through, but I forgot
marking
about it.
Marking as approved.
Yes. Oh, so I added a thing to all of the pr.yamls, Joe, which I might move out of the pr.yaml to a different one. But we actually have static type checking of our workflow files now.
Hang on. This is in .github/workflows in the PonyC repo and pr.yaml.
In all of them. I put it into all of them. And I
action
went through
lint GitHub action workflows.
Yep. And I went through and fixed all of the things that it found that were wrong, of which there were many.
Like what? I'm curious. I guess I can go look at
So one in any of the repos that had a Cirrus failures one. I had it the event trigger for it was using type instead of types as the key. So that was incorrect, and it wasn't doing it just on completed things. So that was fun. It found that. And then for all of the things for triggering release stuff in release notes, I was using /d as in the regular expression thing, which according to their documentation is not supported and just happens to work right now. So I switched it over to the stuff which actually is in their documentation and will work, so that if somebody ever decided to make their actual implementation underneath follow what their documentation says, we won't suddenly break.
Cool.
Those were the big ones. And then it every now and then it found other random things where I had instead of having types, I had like type or something like that, right? It's nice. I put them all in pr.yaml and then afterwards realized it kind of sucks, because if somebody updates pr.yaml and it's invalid, we don't have the nice, wonderful tool telling us what was invalid, because the actual YAML file is invalid, right? Mm-hmm. As compared to if it's in a file of its own, which never gets touched, basically.
Right.
Then it can run on every one of the PRs and it can tell you what you screwed up in pr.yaml.
Right. Makes sense. Cool. I was not aware of that linter. That's nice.
Well, I was like, oh my God. I kept making, when we were moving stuff over from Cirrus, I kept hitting problems where my YAML was invalid, where it was valid YAML, but it was invalid GitHub
right
workflow stuff, and I went looking for a tool and I found that, and I was like, oh well, this is really nice.
Yeah.
And then I installed it and it was like, yo dude, you got these other long-standing problems.
There you go.
All right, did we okay, proved it. I'm gonna merge that. Yeah. And I think I went through and updated us to check out V3 just about everywhere, because V2 is gonna stop working at some point. It's deprecated. Because it uses, well, it's not deprecated, but it uses node 12, and they're just going to switch everything to node 16, and they're not making any promises that it will work. So, yeah. Worth updating. The last one that we have is issue 47 in the AppDirs directory, which is a thing that I noticed when I was doing the update to put in the linter, which is that the macOS tests are currently broken. Because they run, they try to download the latest Mac x86 release, they try to use Pony Up to do it, and that stuff doesn't exist anymore, so it fails. But when we get all the x86 support stuff back in, I can fix that one.
Yeah.
So I assign myself to it.
All right. Anything else people want to bring up while we're here together? For discussion? Anything pony related? All right, then. Thanks, everyone, for joining us this week. Thanks for those who listened along to the recording later, and we'll see you next week.